This is MuggleCast, the Harry Potter podcast discussing everything about J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World. This week's episode is sponsored by Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free, including free shipping, by going to blueapron.com/MuggleCast. New episodes of MuggleCast are made possible thanks to listeners like you. Please visit patreon.com/MuggleCast to support the show and help us grow. In exchange, you'll receive exclusive benefits, including an ad-free version of our podcast. Welcome to MuggleCast episode 326. I'm Andrew.
I'm Eric.
I'm Micah.
And we have a special guest this week. If you're familiar with Harry Potter, you will know who this person is. Welcome Ivana Lynch to the show. Hi, Ivana.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
We're so excited to have you. Of course, you played Luna Lovegood in the Harry Potter movies over the years. And what are you up to these days? I know you're working on a couple of projects.
Yeah, I'm still acting. I'm doing a play at the moment in London called Disco Pigs. Just that. And then I'm sure other people know because I bang on about it enough. I'm an animal activist, vegan activist. So I'm working on my own podcast, which is, I guess this is how this came about because Eric has been helping me, teaching me all the technology. But I just realized, awesome. Have I ever been on MuggleCast before?
Well, you were on the live show at LeakyCon 2012 in Chicago. I remember because you brought, we asked you if you wanted one of our 7-year shirts and you said, no, I'll bring one of my own. And you had the original MuggleCast shirt with the silhouette. Cool. I don't know how you got it.
I still have it. I probably bought it, guys.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing for anyone who doesn't know, Ivana is a true Harry Potter fan. She heard about the Luna Lovegood open casting call through MuggleNet all those years ago, right?
Wouldn't be here if not for MuggleNet. Yeah.
So crazy.
I remember it was just my routine. Every day I'd get home from school. First thing I would do, boot up my dad's, it was one of those ancient computers, those desktops. And I would immediately go to MuggleNet and catch up on the news. And I knew, you guys are responsible for my geekery. Like, for me going on set and knowing all of the cast birthdays, I was such a weirdo. Because the way you would wish the characters' birthdays and you would also wish the cast birthdays happy birthdays. So right. I would both be like, oh, did you know it's Neville's birthday today, Matt? And I would also wish them their own birthdays. I was so weird. And I was really proud of knowing that. I didn't realize that would freak people out. That's all your fault.
Well, sorry. Yeah. Sorry. You brought the fan experience onto set. So that's pretty cool.
I know.
I think it was a much needed component.
It was
the
only thing. So I was very a very insecure teen. I just wasn't confident in myself in many ways, but I was confident in my Harry Potter knowledge and trivia, and I like to flaunt it around the set.
And I remember when I went to the Order of the Phoenix set visit, that was of course your first movie, and the publicist was like, all right, everybody, go easy on Ivana, she's new to this, she's shy. ask her easy questions. And I do remember you were so shy. But you were young. It's
I was also probably starstruck by you, Andrew. I think I probably told you that. Genuinely, you and then also Melissa and John from Pottercast. When I met you guys, I was freaking out afterwards in the corridor. And I had this chaperone because I was underage when I started filming. And she was like, who are these people? What's wrong with you? So I was like, you don't understand. They're Harry Potter fandom royalty. And they just interviewed me.
That's amazing. I told a story a few weeks ago on MuggleCast briefly. Tell me if this is right. I hope I got it right. That you were listening to MuggleCast on set one day. Mm-hmm. And Emma Watson comes up to you and is like, what are you listening to? And you're like, oh, MuggleCast. And then you guys listen together for a little bit or something.
Mm-hmm.
Was that right? Did that happen?
Probably. I had everything because everyone had in the makeup rooms in the morning, everyone had their they're listening. Dan would listen to this rock, I don't know what it was, punk rock kind of stuff. And I introduced everyone to Wizard Rock and probably to MuggleCast. And I think also because didn't Ben have a crush on Emma? And I was kind of trying to set them up. I was trying to talk Ben up to Emma.
Oh my God. Oh, I was not aware that you were trying to set them up. That is hilarious.
Yeah. You didn't get very far with that. I'm not much of a matchmaker. Yeah. But no, I definitely did tell everyone about
That's great.
And I remember it always used to be so annoying when I would do interviews with you guys, because you guys would be in like the same chat as just like journalists who hadn't a clue about the fandom. You know, they just were given this briefing notes. Yeah. And I just wanted to get super geeky and talk about the real, I don't know, just the real in-depth fan and the in-jokes and everything. And we never could.
Yeah, there were journalists on set who would not know anything about Harry Potter. That was always so frustrating, because then they would turn to us in between interviews and be like, what's that character do? What's this character do? I'm like, I'm not telling you. Read the books.
Should have given him the wrong information so it got this.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Harry Potter has no magical abilities. He's a muggle. Anyway, so speaking of all this fandom stuff, what did you think of Cursed Child? I assume you saw it.
I did see Cursed Child, yeah. I did, I never read it because I knew I was going to see it. And I just heard so many people say, you have to experience it. So I saw it and, have you guys seen the play or did you just read it?
Andrew,
I did.
Okay. So I just thought it was so, creates the universe, like the magic was so beautiful and it felt like real, like traditional wizard magic, you know, almost like the way when you go see like a magician show, there's just all this, I don't know, there's a quality about it that's really alluring, whereas like obviously in the films it was also high tech and polished, and I like that it felt like authentic, just old-fashioned magic. That was really beautiful to me, and it really helped create the world. And it felt very different from the film universe, definitely. And I loved Scorpius. He was my favorite. Yeah. I thought he was so sweet, and he had such a vulnerable quality to him, you know. And I think it was, I just love how Jo's, like, her compassion, her heart for everyone, for making you feel for everyone, really just shines through in her characters, and especially through him, you know, whereas the Malfoys were such a detestable family before, and to see someone who is like kind of weak, or not weak, but like just softer, sensitive, and not all the qualities that his family values, I loved him. But on the other side of it, I had a big problem with Harry. I just felt he was so God, I'm struggling for words here, but just the way he was trying to separate Scorpius and Albus. I was like, dude, were you not there for all the Sorting Hat songs? You know, like all of this Sorting Hat that spent years composing these poems or songs or whatever you want to call them about you know.
Unity,
yeah, about togetherness, and also I just felt like Harry's been through this. We've already that was such a big theme in the books, and I just really felt like Harry was wiser than this. And after everything we'd been through, you know, after he'd had all his fits of rage and seeing that, you know, people divided isn't a good thing, and that the house is. Separating people necessarily isn't a good thing.
I think that's very fair. I mean, Harry, throughout his years, befriends students from other houses. That's the whole point. You know, Dumbledore's army befriends Luna. And, you know, he certainly makes his peace with Slytherin House because he names his child after Snape.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think he's a little, Harry and Cursed Child, and this reads through in the script as well, a little too out of it. And you can tell
that he's stressed out. Right?
Yeah, but it exists. It very clearly, I think, exists to serve the plot, and but like that's apparent. Where it's just like, oh, we have to separate these two kids now so that they'll want to be together more.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But it just it was out of character for me. He wasn't. I could see it coming, you know, and I don't like that in stories when I know what the blow up is gonna be, that it's like you shouldn't have been trying to keep these people apart, and that's going to work against you. But I guess it's also like, I mean, it presents the idea that just because he's older doesn't mean he's going to be wiser, and or he's not going to always know what to do. It might be that he just has more baggage, but for me it just didn't feel true to Harry. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I do agree with your positive points, particularly the magic on stage, seeing that actually happen. It's like, wow, how did they do that? You really, because they can't cheat with special effects, with digital effects.
Absolutely, yeah.
So it's, yeah, really cool. So it's very impressive. And then, of course, Fantastic Beasts. Do you love it?
I loved Fantastic Beasts. I really did. I thought it was so good. I just love Newt. I was like so happy to have a really awkward hero. You know, he's even though he speaks, he's just like, he's not confident. He's not he's only in his element when he's in the animal world. And I think you see that, like, he deals with humans because of his passion for saving animals and protecting animals, but he's just not, he is just awkward and just interesting, and I just thought the animals were also, like, the world, it for me, it always expands the world, and when you see the creatures and when you learn more about the creatures, and to see another culture, it's like, I think, you know, Harry Potter has always been thought of as such a quintessentially British thing, and yes, that's Harry Potter, but that isn't the Wizarding World, and just so exciting to have seen that expansion for me.
Yeah. And so on today's episode, we will be talking about Newt to wrap up our character discussion series. And it's so great to have you on this episode, Ivana, because you love animals, like you said. So it works out very well. And you know, it's also so glad we're having you on now, because we just found out a couple weeks ago that they're doing open auditions for these teenage Fantastic Beast roles, teenage Newt, Leda, Grindelwald, Dumbledore,
so
which
cool.
I'm sure you must be theorizing a lot of the potential storylines that J.K. Rowling might be getting into. But I was wondering, do you have any advice for these teenagers, since you yourself went through this?
I don't know. The advice, I would just say to be true to your interpretation of the characters. It's obviously, it's a little bit different because they don't exactly know the characters, they don't have all the information on them, but I would say, like, you know, play in your imagination, create someone who you feel is, like, realistic and true to what you know about them and their history, and just go and do that. Like, don't worry about being right or being what they want. Just, like, that was what I did, and that's what I think they really picked up on. That I just was like, I'm not going in to please these casting directors. I'm going in to be true to the spirit of Luna. And I just had this weird confidence that I knew Luna better than anyone. And if anyone had a different interpretation of her, that they were wrong. That was just what I felt. I was like, and I actually said that to him, which is really out of character for me. It sounds really cocky, but as I say, it was just like this faith I had that, where I went in and they were asking me about her and my interpretation. I was like, you know, it's up to you to disagree with me, but if you go a different way with Luna, I respectfully have to say that you're going the wrong direction. So
you would have boycotted all the future films, right?
Oh God, it would have been painful. I would have I don't think I would have enjoyed those films anymore. Yeah.
Who is in the room though that you said that to? Just out of curiosity.
It was David Heyman, David Barron, David Yates. The three Davids. Yeah.
Nice.
And I think Fiona, the casting director, was there at the same time.
Your statements were warranted, though, because I think everybody agrees that you are Luna. Like, it's just amazing.
I personally don't feel like I am Luna. I feel like that'd be really big-headed of me to say, because I see her as such like an aspirational figure. She's someone who just, like, really inspired me to just embrace anything I felt uncomfortable about myself, and she still does. I just knew, it was just this feeling whenever I read the books, I got this huge sense of relief and, like, happiness and inspiration whenever she came on the page, because she was so accepting of everyone around her and so curious and so open to diversity. And I just was like, I felt really fierce about the fact that I just didn't want somebody who's just an actress just being like, oh, awesome, this will advance my career and, you know, scheming about it. I just was like, no, Luna is so much bigger than the actress. Luna is so much bigger than whoever plays her, that you just have to put her first. You have to put that energy, that beautiful sort of light that she brings to the world, to her situation around her. You have to embody that. So yeah, I would say, I mean, yeah. Advice for people auditioning, just like, go as geeky as you want. Like, just, yeah. You know, study and realize it's not really about, it's not about your talent or your experience as an actor. It's about your passion for the character. And like, knowing these people, these creators of the films as I do, they so appreciated that when they saw that in me, that I was fierce about protecting her spirit. And as I say, her story was greater than mine. And they want someone who has ideas. They don't want someone who's just going to stand up and do, you know, interpret it. They want someone who is going to add more to it. Like the fact that I went to my first screen test, my earrings were like, you know the way I make the earrings. So I'd made like these pigs with wings. I really thought that was like, for me, that was like a little symbol of, oh, impossible. The impossible is possible. I don't know. I was going so geeky about it. And they immediately pointed them out and they were like, they loved them. And they encouraged me then as soon as I got the role, they were like, all right, get to work, make some Luna accessories. And
that's great.
They wanted, and the same thing with the, when they couldn't exactly figure out how the lion hat, how they wanted it to look, they came to me. And they want someone who has specific ideas on the character. And David Yates, like, to his credit, he always said to me, and I think this is really, having worked with other directors, this is kind of a rare quality in the director, that he always said, you know Luna better than anyone in the world. He's purely because you're playing her. It's like, you are part of her, she's part of you. And he never like forced any directions on me. And if he was unhappy with the way I was playing something, or if he just didn't feel like it fit right, all he would do was question me. He would question and question till we got to somewhere where we had a mutual understanding, until I would go like, oh yeah, actually she wouldn't do it like this. You're right. So yeah, go in there, own that character and just really believe that you know them better than anyone, and you can do the best version of your character, I think. Yeah.
That's great advice. You must have been thrilled. I mean, you're speaking very fondly of David Yates, that you must have been thrilled to hear he was coming back for Fantastic Beasts.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, he really cares for it, and he really knows it. And he just knows how to treat actors, which is so nice. Because so many directors just yell at you and tell you you're wrong. Or they force you to do. And it's like, he really is such a collaborator with actors. And he sees through things, you know. He always talks about, like, the quality of actors. I remember when a while ago, I think it was at the Fantastic Beasts premiere and afterwards. And I was saying how I really liked Queenie's character. And he was talking about, he's like, it's interesting, she's got a real Luna quality to her. And I was like, that's, because they're not, you know, they're very different in many ways, but it is that sort of that essence, I think, that he was talking about. And I love that he tunes into that.
Cool. No, that was all very well said. How's J.K. Rowling doing? You hang out with her much?
I see her at all the Lumos events, because I'm an ambassador for Lumos now, myself and Bonnie Wright. So I see her there a lot, but she's always very stressed, and always like everyone in the room is trying to talk to her. So I just say hi and I tell her my new thoughts. My recent thing has been like, I've become obsessed with housing. Because
house sorting.
Well, I don't want to go on about this, but basically, I started dating someone like a year ago, and then was completely like shocked to discover he's a Slytherin. Like, he took the test and I was blown away. I was like, I am dating a Slytherin? Like, I guess I've always had Slytherin friends, but they just seem a little bit ruthless for me. But then I realized, like, I've really changed as I've grown up. Like, I used to lean more towards Gryffindor, Ravenclaw, and kind of Hufflepuff. Like, a lot of my best friends are Hufflepuffs because I, you know, they're supportive and loyal and they're lovely friends. But I started to realize that I'm more, lately, more attracted to the Slytherin qualities of being ambitious and being tough and being like, you know, yearning for greatness, that kind of thing. And I don't know about you guys, if you do this thing where every now and then, if like, you know, a Facebook Harry Potter house quiz crops up, kind of just want to check to be like, oh, I wonder, oh, let's see.
Make sure everything's still on the up and up.
Yeah, exactly. To check in on your mental health. So I do this anyway. I check on it. And and I always get Gryffindor. That just doesn't change. I'm definitely Gryffindor. But my secondary house, which used to always be Ravenclaw, has lately been Slytherin. And I've been like, OMG, what is going on? Yeah, like, do I need to see a psychologist? What's going on? Seriously.
You're going dark. Yeah. Dark arts.
But so I got a bit obsessed with that. And so I've been writing to her about that and telling her I've been telling her like how accurate I found it is, like how learning that my boyfriend is a Slytherin taught me so much about him, just taught me what he values and taught me how he makes choices. And I was like, it's really a lot more accurate than like astrology. I feel like horoscopes are so vague, and housing is just... it's just perfect. I don't know. I would love to hear.
She must have loved hearing that, knowing you thought it was better than astrology.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah, but yeah. She's obviously thought, like, the more I get into the books, the more I'm like, this is such a brilliant, like, obviously, yes, it's better that everyone just unifies and reaches common ground. But like, it does help you understand how people make choices.
Yeah, I mean, it does. Yeah, for sure. Hmm. Yvonne, I have a confession to make. You're a Slytherin.
Oh, go on.
Well, actually, yes, I did convert to Slytherin earlier this year.
A new Slytherin, yeah.
No, I'm totally Slytherin. I told you, I was like, I've become the biggest Slytherin apologist. Yeah, I'm waiting to hear her thoughts on that. But yeah, we still write letters. Sorry, go on. I interrupted you.
Good. Oh, no, I followed your boyfriend on Instagram a few months ago because he's very attractive.
He's so pretty. I know.
He's so pretty.
And that's the thing also. That's so funny. I have to tell him that. He'll be delighted. But he also like that. He has such a typical Slytherin response to that. Whenever I tell him how like pretty I find him, he's like, "Get in line, sister," or he just like says something. he just, and it's joking, but he's like, it's such a Slytherin response where I'm like gushing and being so affectionate, and he's like, "I know, I'm kind of perfect." It's really funny. That's so cute.
That's great.
That makes me laugh.
Yeah. We have lots to talk about today with Yvonne, but first we want to tell you about this week's sponsor. They are Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. It is summertime, and the great thing about Blue Apron is that they change the meals based on the season. So right now they're doing a lot of great meals that are tailored to summer. I've been using it with my family for the past few weeks and absolutely loving it. You can get meals created for four people sent to you. And we're actually down at the beach this week with my family, and we brought one of our Blue Apron boxes down. And Blue Apron recipes, they're so easy to create that even in a small little kitchen like we have here down at the beach, it's no problem to make these. They give you easy instructions. You need minimal tools. They're easy to cook, and they are delicious. Here are a few of the featured upcoming meals. There's a seared chicken and creamy pasta salad with summer squash and sweet peppers. There's creamy shrimp rolls with quick pickles and sweet potato wedges. There is a fresh basil fettuccine pasta with sweet corn. And there's also chili butter steaks with Parmesan potatoes and spinach. Mm-mm. Don't like any of those recipes? No problem. You can choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. And Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/mugglecast. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/mugglecast. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. So let's move on to let's talk about Newt now. Let's talk more in depth about Newt. So like I said, this is our final, we've been talking about particular characters, Yvonne, on each episode, and we've reached the final one here. So I wanted to start off with name origins, because looking at the different parts of his name, I mean, gosh, like, they perfectly align, Newt's names
J.K. Rowling too, everything is intentional. Everything is highly, highly well
chosen.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
Though there is one part that I want to get into when looking at the name origins here. But so Newton was derived from the Old English place name meaning new town. that one. And that one, it's like, oh, okay, well, he came to a new town in Fantastic Beasts. He went to New York.
We're ticking that box real early.
Yeah, ticked, yep. Artemis was a goddess in Greek mythology, the daughter of Zeus and Leto, and the twin sister of Apollo. She's the goddess of the moon, hunting, the wilderness, and the gift of taming wild animals. Hello. In myth, Artemis spends most of her time hunting, which she has in common with Newt, although he seeks wild animals for conservation rather than sport. And then Fido. This is the part I thought was interesting. It's of Latin origin, meaning I trust or faithful. Now, I was wondering, what's the connection here? Are we going to see something faithful come through in a future movie, or does it mean
I think it's his Hufflepuff shining
animals?
Through. That's what I'm thinking of, is because Hufflepuffs are very loyal, and in that case, you know, loyal to be extrapolated to mean faithful as well.
Yeah.
But as well, you know, the Latin fidelis meaning truth. I think that Newt, in spite of all odds, is very true to himself and true to his own character in the way that, Ivana, you were just talking about, you know, as well being with Luna, how you approach the character. Luna is also, you know, her own person. She is very much mm-hmm. herself. And Newt is that. So I think gifting this middle name, this second middle name to Newt, is a way of saying that this character is true to his self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, hang on a second. I need to backtrack. Where did you get all these names?
So it's...
Are these in Fantastic Beasts, the movie, the book?
I think in the book.
Not in the movie. Yeah, it's more... But I'm trying to relate it to the movie because now we're, okay. You know, we're focusing more on that.
Mm-hmm. So it's just the only thing in the actual Fantastic Beasts book is that, they added something new. They added that foreword by him. But I think in the biography section, it just says Newton Artemis Fido Scamander. Mm-hmm. That's his name.
Yeah.
And so Artemis is a girl's name? A goddess?
Well, a goddess in Greek mythology, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Were you going to say something, Micah?
I just think that the names play really well to his character, and I thought the Fido one was just a little fun thing that J.K. Rowling threw in there, you know, just it's your everyday kind of basic dog's name, right?
Yeah. Here, Fido. Here, boy. Here,
no,
boy.
But the fact that would kind of be one of his middle names, which obviously you guys mentioned, we haven't really heard much about at all in the films, but it's there, and I don't know, it adds to his character, that's for sure.
I like that.
And then his last name, of course, is Scamander, and anyone could immediately pick up on that when first hearing his name. It's very similar to Salamander, which is a type of lizard. So,
by the way, are salamanders, like, are they real in the Muggle, in our world?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, because
they actually change colors and feed on flames? That sounds so wizardy to me.
I don't think they feed on flames. I think that's the J.K. Rowling affectation of that.
Salamanders. I get so confused, where I'm like, wait, were phoenixes real and are they extinct? Like, I'm
right.
This is one where I'm so like, that sounds so J.K. Rowling. Salamanders.
Yeah. Salamanders are that creature that exists. Like, they study them in Care of Magical Creatures, I think, in one of the years. But they're totally real. It's one of those real creatures that was just appropriated for the Wizarding World for some reason. Like, I would love to know why she did that.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And Scamander is also Luna's future last name, isn't it?
Hell yes. Yes, it is. Ralph. Yeah. I was going to ask, do you think when Joe wrote when she wrote like Fantastic Beasts, Where to Find, like, do you think she always knew that she would go so in depth into a story? I'm sure you've already talked about this on the podcast, but I just always wonder, like, when she sets up these new characters, do you think she puts a pin in it and is like, I'd like to explore him someday?
You know, she said in an interview or two that she said that this was the story she always wanted to write next, if there was going to be another story. And of course, she always kept that quiet until the series actually happens. She never really said that prior.
Right.
But part of me wonders, does she mean she wanted to write Newt's story, or did she want to write the whole Grindelwald-Dumbledore battle? Because that's obviously where this is going. So I'm still not sure, but I guess she is really fascinated by the character of Newt.
Yeah, she has to be.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about, of course, his Hufflepuffness, Newt's Hufflepuffness, because the big thing for me when I first saw this film, or when we first learned that it was going to be a thing, is that Newt Scamander is a Hufflepuff, and that's my house affiliation, according to Pottermore. I was very surprised when I got it, because I had been dressing as a Gryffindor for years. But apparently wearing the robes does not a Gryffindor make. But upon reading immediately the Hufflepuff welcome letter on Pottermore, I found a lot of things to be true about my own character, but also the Hufflepuff welcome letter on Pottermore was the very first time that I felt J.K. Rowling took the proper amount of time to give Hufflepuff their due. You know, Hufflepuff is kind of, I don't know, it's just, they're left out. You know, theirs is the only Hufflepuff.
They have an off-Broadway play, though, Eric.
They do have an off-Broadway play now. Yeah,
explain
they do.
Explain this, please.
Go ahead, Micah.
Yeah.
Well, since I'm the ad person for this show, yeah. So they, I don't know how many years ago it was, but it's been around for a bit of time now. They did this whole off-Broadway show. It's about 90 minutes or so, and it explores the Hufflepuff house during the time that Harry was at Hogwarts, and it's really comical. If you go, you're definitely going to laugh. There's a lot of inside jokes for those of us who have read the books and seen the film. So,
Micah loved it.
It's called Puffs.
Yeah, I went in. I didn't know what to expect, and I really enjoy it. I definitely recommend anybody who's in the New York City area to go and see it. It's
still playing.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it's called Puffs, the play.
Puffs.
Yeah. It's named after Ivana's cat.
It's named after what? My cat?
Your cat.
Who, by the way, would definitely be Hufflepuff.
But so the whole reason that there's this play can exist is because Hufflepuffs were not in the books. The ones that were kind of jerks.
Cedric wasn't a jerk. Tonks
no,
wasn't.
No, not well. Did you read Cursed Child? He turns bad. It's pretty bad.
Cedric?
But Cedric is the exception. Cedric is, of course, the very fact that he was picked by the arbitrary, you know, supernatural goblet of fire to be the champion of Hogwarts does say something. And I like that. But for too long, as a conflicted Pottermore Hufflepuff, before it, you know, really came out and before, I just think that's very thin over time when you keep telling yourself that, like, oh, Cedric Diggory, like, I feel good about being a Hufflepuff because Cedric Diggory was a Hufflepuff. But, like, he dies pretty soon, too. He just gets bested by Wormtail. And you're like, well, so how far can you go to, like, cling to him as, not because he fails, but just because there's not a living Hufflepuff who you can really look up to currently. And that's what Newt is for me.
Well, what about Tonks? Okay, wait. Tonks has died, obviously, but don't you think she's more of a redeemer for Hufflepuff?
I wonder. I think that what it is that very, very generally, the qualities of Hufflepuff House are not necessarily highlighted in the Harry Potter stories so much. Maybe that's controversial, but I just forget, who's a Hufflepuff, or the idea that you would have, though, getting to Newt, a leading man who is a Hufflepuff, for me, like, is a profound resurgence, or for the very first time, it feels like the qualities that makes one a Hufflepuff are being brought main stage in a way that they haven't before.
Well, I think it's because, like, Hufflepuffs, like, are disinclined to play the hero. They don't seem to see glory the way Gryffindors and Slytherins do. And, you know, they just have a lot less ego than the rest of the houses, you know? So, like, for themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think Newt is such an unusual hero because, well, I mean, his cause is so much for the animals and for justice for them. It's so not about him, and you get the sense that he doesn't feel comfortable in the spotlight except when he's, sorry, that's my cat chiming in with her support for this this point. I think he doesn't feel like, unless he's actually talking about this cause, which he feels so much for, he doesn't want to just stand there and be the center of attention. Like, he's not like Harry, where he has a saving people thing, as Hermione called it. He I think that's why Hufflepuffs are often in the background. Like, they're the kind of people who, like, they support and they can be. I know for me personally, a lot of my friends who are Hufflepuffs and my mom, like, those people are my rock, and those people, they have this kind of this strength that I don't have. But it's not necessarily the thing that will put them in the spotlight, you know?
So yeah. I think I should clarify the difference of wanting the spotlight and just wanting to see sort of my fellow Hufflepuffs being represented. Like, that's the joy of watching Fantastic Beasts for me, is seeing, Hufflepuff House, I think when Cedric was chosen as the Hogwarts champion, they felt a sense of pride, and it might not be their defining characteristic, but they were very proud for him. And of course, they used the opportunity to treat Harry like dirt as well, because they're very loyal to Cedric. But I do feel that pride for seeing, you know, Newt Scamander, a Hufflepuff, in the lead role. But you're also right, like, that he's got the spotlight and he doesn't want it and he doesn't seek it, I think makes him a more compelling character. And it's I feel so thrilled that J.K. Rowling has chosen to make this person, this character, the hero, the main character of her new story.
Yeah.
Me too.
Well, and speaking of that, so another point I wanted to bring up was just his contributions to the wizarding world.
Yeah.
They appear to be teaching the wizarding world about animals, because I think it's notable that we haven't heard of any other people who are studying animals to the degree that he is, other than like a Care of Magical Creatures teacher at Hogwarts. Is he simply the guy? And I guess this plays into the fact that Newt doesn't really want the spotlight. He's an author off doing his own thing. And that shines through in his personality. He is introverted and he does seem a little weird, but that's just Newt. Like, when you see him take on, was it the Arumpant in the movie? He's making all these weird noises, and he doesn't care.
That's my favorite,
like, he probably
scene
wouldn't
in
do
the movie.
Yeah, he wouldn't be that outward in front of people unless he has to when he's dealing with animals. But then also, Eric, to your point, he could be the reluctant hero later in this series if he's going to be helping take down Grindelwald.
Yeah.
And we'll see him struggling.
That is the thing that ties into sort of Hufflepuffs as a house. And this is from the Pottermore welcome letter. I wrote it down. It says, "Welcome to Hufflepuff House. Our emblem is the badger, an animal that is often underestimated because it lives quietly until attacked, but which, when provoked, can fight off animals much larger than itself, including wolves." So here's the whole thing about, you know, Hufflepuff House. They're not a bunch of duffers, as Hagrid called them. They are, in fact, very talented, and this is where it comes in with Newt. Like you're saying, Andrew, like, when attacked or when he needs to fight in the film, he is an exceptional wizard. He's also, it helps, the first adult that we've ever seen, you know, in this capacity performing magic and dueling. So we get to watch him the entire film apparating very quickly and holding his own against a myriad of obstacles. And he even uses the beasts themselves to succeed in fighting and combat and these things. And so he's very, very, very talented. He's very accomplished. And I think that just goes back to the trait of the badger, though. You know, of being sort of detrimentally underestimated, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Do you relate to Newt a lot as a Hufflepuff, Eric?
I'm not sure, because a lot of what spoke to me in the welcome letter about Hufflepuffs was just the way that they sort of relate to each other and are kind of, I don't know, interested in their community and very I think I relate to sort of interactions between Hufflepuffs very much more, and how I keep, like, friendships and what I value in friendships. And it's not the loyalty aspect so much as just the sort of being grounded in things. So I relate to that, and I think Newt I really respect as a person who is following his own path, because that very much represents my view of my own life trajectory. Where, I mean, you know, being a part of a Harry Potter website and a Harry Potter podcast was not anyone's in my family's idea of success or life trajectory. And when I followed that, pulled that thread and started traveling, you know, due to the opportunities presented to me, everyone was a little blown away in my family. Mm-hmm. And so standing out, you know, but ultimately being true to myself, being my own person, has been a factor in making every decision I've ever made in my life. And it's gotten me to a happy place where I am now. So I really just believe in being unique and following your own path, which it seems that Hufflepuff House is known to do. And so for that reason, I do see an example figure in Newt, and I feel at home, most at home with the house when I think of Hufflepuffs in that light.
That's interesting. And also, I mean, something I noticed just about you as a Hufflepuff and about Newt is like, there's this, as you say, quiet work ethic, where it's like, yeah, like not glory seeking, but that's what comes first. And the fact that he doesn't let, you know, his personal life, his emotions interfere with what's going on, the way, like, you don't even know anything. You don't even know until Queenie points out, isn't Queenie? She points it out. Where, what does she say about people? You can read people most when they're hurting. Like, that just doesn't, that just isn't addressed in the film until she has this, like, you know, quiet heart to heart with him. And I think that's just so admirable about Hufflepuffs, that whereas Gryffindors would be like, my heart is broken and I want the world to know about it and I'm going to fight for love, that kind of way, you know? It's just, he so much puts that aside in favor of, you know, what he believes is what needs to be done, is important.
Yeah, he sacrifices his own, I mean, not like happiness or well-being in any dramatic way, but I think that's the other side of Newt as a character in this film, is that he is vulnerable, or he's a character who's allowed to be vulnerable. I mean, he has this hole. It's described in the Blu-ray special features. Eddie, during a segment called The Magizoologist, talks about how it's revealed through the course of the film that there's sort of this void, this little hole in Newt as a character, which gets slowly filled when he begins to find his friends here in this film. And the fact that, you're right, Evie, Queenie points out that, you know, he's had this relationship in the past which hasn't gone well, and that, you know, he carries this photo of this girl, but it almost reminds him of something painful, that he is a wholly rounded character. I mean, he doesn't speak up about it, and it's not really an issue until she points it out. But yeah, he's very much on a journey. And I think that's also what makes him a good character, is he has some room to grow, you know, as a person. And Newt being a person who hasn't, you know, really felt at home with humans, he tracks, you know, with animals more, getting to have him be thrust through circumstances of the film into this situation where he needs to interact with these other people is good for him. But it also,
Let's talk more about the animals. I know, Ivana, you wanted to talk about this in particular, his connection.
Definitely.
Well, I just wanted to throw, and this might lead into it, because you mentioned vulnerability, and I think that these creatures provide an extra level of vulnerability to Newt, especially moving forward in these films. I mean, I think there were moments where we saw that in the first movie, but I wonder, you know, looking at characters like Grindelwald, assuming that he's going to play a major role moving forward, could they be used not only against him, but, you know, to try and manipulate him in some way?
You know what scene is coming to mind is when they take his suitcase in the big committee scene, and he becomes almost immediately unhinged, you know, saying, do not hurt the beasts. There's nothing in there that want to hurt you. Don't touch my creatures. You know, he is very, very sort of disassembled in that moment.
Yeah, they could use the creatures against him. That'd be so hard to watch, though. Like, if they're keeping the creatures locked up or potentially torturing them or something.
Really, I don't want to think about that.
Yeah, I don't want to think about something happy. Something happy, real quick.
Sorry.
That's probably going to happen, though, isn't it? Now that you've mentioned it, how it becomes unhinged. Yeah, like that.
If you, we know J.K. Rowling listens to the podcast, so she's going to for the podcast.
So, Ivana, what do you see in Newt's connection to his creatures.
Okay, yeah, I'm excited to talk about this. Sorry, were you finished at your point, Mike?
Yeah, no, I thought it might tie into what you were going to say, or in part anyway.
Okay. Well, I mean, speaking of someone who loves animals and someone who understands Luna's connection with animals, I often think it's like a lot of people who connect with animals and who want to help them, it's because they feel misunderstood by society. It's because they feel like they're an outsider. And animals, like, they just have this beautiful quality of letting you be whoever you are. You know, dogs don't ever prejudice against anyone based on, you know, the normal things that humans prejudice against, like skin color, sexuality, things like that. They just, they're so accepting. And it's not that I don't think Luna or Newt prefer animal company. I think it's just a very different kind of relationship. And animals are just, I mean, animals are creatures that are so, so exploited and so prejudiced against just because they're so different. Like, I really believe, again, this is me speaking as a vegan, but I don't believe that we are better than animals. I don't believe that we were born with any more rights than they should have. But because we're stronger and we, in many ways, we have this feeling, humans have this urge where they have to, like, dominate, crush, you know, own, possess anything that's way too different to them. And we do it with, like, you know, people in our own community who are just a little bit too weird, like with Luna, and I imagine sort of with Newt, maybe, where Luna was bullied just because she just we feel threatened by things that are too different to us and are too weird, but are also comfortable in that. And I see that happen to animals. Because they are so different from us, we feel like it's our right, and it gives us some weird, twisted sense of power. And I think Newt probably relates to the innocence of animals and to the oddness of them. And he feels, as someone who's probably been bullied himself in school, and, you know, thinking about his family and how they were, what is it, ministry types, and just he grew up different to them, and he took a different route, as you say, Eric. He took a path less traveled, and he had to be strong in that. And I think he feels this fierce sense of protection for them because he didn't get that protection when he was younger, and when he was the odd one out, he didn't have anyone standing up for him. And I think that's why he wants to be a voice for animals. That's my thoughts on it.
Yeah.
When you were talking about that, I was thinking specifically about just how strange and exotic. I mean, I think in general, animals, you know, what you said is really beautiful about how animals are so different to us, and we somehow feel threatened as a result. Thinking about the beasts in the case in the movie, you know, those crazy creatures, the ones that there's like that mammal that it sort of has, it's like a big lion but has like a pufferfish mane where it like puffs out. I'm just like, how did this creature, there's creatures in this case in the scene in the movie where you're just like, how did these evolve? Or the ones that tickle Jacob, or like the one with the tendrils coming out of the face, and it's just like gooey and slimy, and you're just like, how is this even a creature that evolves? But it's so different. Like, it's the complete exaggeration of the strangeness of beasts, and yet they're treated so compassionately by Newt.
Yeah.
And I think the movie does a really good job of evoking this sense, which is Newt's shared sense of wanting to protect and educate, because that, you know, is what they're there for. And he's giving these beasts a home. And it's even said in the movie where they are often being hunted and eradicated. And in fact, the I think it's the tendril beast things that are like the only breeding pair in existence. And so we're shown that these crazy looking creatures are when you hear that they are the only ones left, it tugs at your heart, I think, as a just a human. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to be like an animal lover to realize, oh my God, Newt is actually doing something that not only he views as really important, but we should too.
Ivana, we've talked about this a bunch of times on the show. Do you think he's going to use his beasts to take down Grindelwald, kind of like Pokemon style, where he's choosing these?
Wow. Gosh, that's a big one. I just don't think Newt believes in using animals, you know, like making them
to fight.
Yeah, making them do. I always had a big problem with, well, not always, because I was a big Pokemon fan as a kid. But as soon as the app came out last year, I was like, OMG, is Pokemon vegan? I don't think it is. I was like, the ideology that just because they're there, like in the world, that we get to just own them. I had a really big problem with it. It was a real conflict for me. I was like, this is a game. Get over yourself. But I felt like it was reinforcing the idea that we get to own and use animals to our, as we see fit. And I think, I just don't think Newt would be one to like train animals. And a lot of those animals, like, you know, say cats, for example, and dogs are easier to train. But with things like elephants and lions, you have to use really cruel practices to literally break their spirits to make them cooperate with you. And I don't think he would, I think he would be strongly against that, you know? Yeah. I'm quite conflicted about where he sits on the animal rights scale, what his ethics are in relation to animals, you know, because I think he sees it. You see him in the film cutting up meat and serving it, and he doesn't seem to have any problem with that. I think he's more believes in the circle of life and the that, you know, that there's an order of things.
A hierarchy.
Yeah. It was actually tofu.
It was. I've never seen tofu looking like that. It could be the impossible meat. There's apparently this new vegan burger called the Impossible Burger that like bleeds like meat. And
Okay, that creeps me out. I wouldn't eat a bloody burger any more than I would eat that burger.
Well, I don't think it has blood when it's cooked, but it's not actual blood.
Yeah, okay. I will say, though, I mean, there is precedent in the film for Newt using beasts. The Swooping Evil... is Newt's if that is in fact the bird that he sets on those aurors they're escaping from the ministry. It's even a moment of comedic nature where he's like, don't go for the brains, you know, not the brains, because the bird immediately like collides with this guy's face, and it's very much like Alien for a couple seconds there. You know, we see him just roll out, he yo-yos out that bird to save Tina and to, you know, attack these ministry officials. So I do think that he is on somewhere on that scale, like you're saying, Ivana, of he's okay to a certain extent using beasts. But what you said about like having to break an animal's spirit, I definitely agree. He wouldn't really. Yeah. He's not training an army, but
would use cruelty in any in any situation.
But if and where the qualities of these beasts can assist him, particularly in getting out of a scuffle, I think that is acceptable to him.
Like maybe going to fetch a key or stuff like not animal to animal or animal to human combat. Send them on tasks.
He was willing to trade away Pickett.
But not really.
He told Pickett that he never would have gone through with that.
Yeah, he was hesitant, wasn't he?
Oh, that was a tough moment. I was wondering, what do you guys think would be his opinion on Spew and on elf house elves?
I wonder.
Well, we know, I was reading his bio. He worked in something house elf related in the ministry, right?
Did he?
I'm looking it up real quick. Yeah, hold on.
I think because there's also...
I think he would be a member of Spew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm? They're classified as something different than beasts, right? They're
of course.
Like, so there. I mean, there's multiple levels of. I think that he would view them as people first and foremost. So I think that that's true, and I think that knowing Newt's propensity to just disagree with sort of the standard government's position on stuff, I think he would absolutely 100% join Spew and be part of, you know, groups that want to affect change, because he himself, it would be sort of hypocritical if he wasn't, because he himself is trying to change a very large established public mindset as it pertains to creatures. And so I think that it would be right up his alley to do sort of an overhaul on what people have traditionally taken beasts, these other creatures, these other intelligent sentient species with cultures and histories. I think that he would want to change all of it.
He worked in the Office for House Elf Relocation at the Ministry for 2 years before joining the Beast Division. So presumably he wanted to look out for the House Elves.
But like relocating them with new owners, new households?
Yeah, I guess so.
It's probably, yeah.
And wait, does it say when he worked there?
Well, it was before joining the Beast Division.
Maybe
so
it was like
the early 1900s.
That's where he formed his beliefs, you know? That might be where he saw, maybe he quit because he didn't like what he saw, what was happening, and that people weren't changing, making the kind of changes he wanted.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But I wonder, I don't know how soon before he started collecting and saving creatures that was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like he just seems like the type of person who grew up fascinated by beasts in general.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
You know, from the first time he read about them or saw one, he was just always hooked on it. And this is definitely his lifelong passion. Mm-hmm. And the reason I had asked you, Ivana, how you think if he could get his beasts involved in the fight is because I feel like this Wizarding World, this movie series is clearly going towards that big war. Mm. And Newt's got to be involved somehow, right? Because he's still going to be the lead character.
Sure.
So that's why I'm wondering if he's going to use his beast somehow. But I guess we'll see. What are we going to say, Micah? Yeah.
One question that I did have, and I know we have discussed this on the podcast, so more for Evie about just speaking of Beast and Newt. What are the chances, I guess, do you think that either Fox came from Newt to Dumbledore or Aragog came from Newt to Hagrid?
Oh, wow. I think I've read that before. I think it might have been something one of you guys tweeted about. That's got to be the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's got to be.
There's
that
one line in the book about, what was it?
I came to Hagrid in a pocket from a traveler.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, really?
Yeah, Aragog says that.
I didn't
to
really
Harry.
Think of. I was more talking about about Fox, about the Phoenix. So
oh, yeah,
like
yeah.
That's
oh,
definitely. Okay. Yeah, I feel like Newt definitely passed him on to Dumbledore.
Yeah. And of course, those two were very close. We don't know why yet, but.
Do we know when Dumbledore got Fox?
No.
No.
But we know that he cherishes Fox. Like, there's a special connection and relation. Like, Dumbledore's everything is a phoenix. Like, his Patronus, he's not an animagus, but if he was, I think it would be a phoenix as well. I don't know.
Oh,
it's kind
gonna
of an
be
interesting...
something heart wrenching, like Newt's on his deathbed and gives him like a phoenix eggs or something, isn't it? Oh, totally is.
Wait, are there phoenix eggs? Is that a thing? Or are they just ashes from the phoenix it was previously?
I don't know.
It's a chicken and egg joke that I tried to make there. But I definitely think. Well, again, in those special features on the Blu-ray, J.K. Rowling says that Newt was probably, which of course you mean, yes, this absolutely happened, the man who introduced the subject of Care of Magical Creatures to Hogwarts. So because of his views on beasts, and I think that whatever his friendship with Dumbledore turns out to be or turns out to have been, I hope and I feel pretty confident we will get that entire backstory of how they became friends, what specifically their relationship is, because that ties into what's coming with Grindelwald and Dumbledore's own thing. I get it. But because of Dumbledore's close friendship with Newt, I think Dumbledore would have seen it as a very good cause. And also being the school, like the school for wizards, that it would be irresponsible not to train young wizards how to deal with beasts, how to take care of them. And I think that it's also just a good practice to forward Newt's cause by teaching this class, by having this class. So I think that Dumbledore would have very much, you know, been okay if once Newt suggests that, you know, they have a Hogwarts class on this and they have a textbook to work off of because he's just written one. You know, I think that that's based on their friendship. I think that it's, you know, maybe Newt gives Dumbledore a phoenix and Dumbledore gives Newt the class that he has always wanted to be taught at Hogwarts.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, big question. Oh, sorry, Micah, interrupted you.
No, go ahead. You go.
Well, do you think like Newt, obviously like his vision is for animals to be respected and for them to live in their natural habitats. But like, do you think Newt achieves... Like, the world that Harry lives in, is it close to what Newt wanted? Has he achieved it? Or I'm wondering, like, because obviously Is Ralph his grandson or great grandson? I should know this.
I'm trying. I actually don't know. Is it great? I thought
I think
great.
It's great grandson. I'll look. He becomes a naturalist. I wonder, is it just like his family is continuing the work and it's not, he hasn't achieved his vision yet for the kind of equality or respect for animals that he's working towards.
I think that it's an ongoing thing. I'd like to believe that Newt, when he eventually dies or did die, did so in a happy, like that he was happy with where he had gotten to. I think that certainly starting off where he did when there was not even that class at Hogwarts and ending in a place where his direct contributions to the Wizarding World were the foundation of that change, you know, whether or not it's as far as he wanted it to get, who's to say? I think probably you're right in suspecting that maybe not.
I think not, because at the same time, we see so much examples of animal exploitation and abuse, like the way the dragons are kept, and wands, dragon heartstrings are used, and unicorn hair. Like, it is a very on vegan world.
It's a really good. I didn't even think about dragon heartstrings as being. I mean, that's one third of Ollivander's entire profession.
And I would even say with Hagrid too. And while he's trying to teach care of magical creatures, so much happens with him and. You would think that it's still not a widely accepted subject. He's kind of treated, he's treated in a totally inappropriate way many times throughout the series just because of who he is. But just in terms of the subject that he's trying to teach, you know, he has, I think, similar feelings towards creatures as Newt does. So I was interested to see what you guys thought about that. You know, he talks about how they're always misunderstood, and he seems to have that same kind of affinity.
Yeah, but like when we're talking about this, I'm thinking, you're right, but there's also like no real good curriculum set around it. And this might have to do with a couple things. It might deal with Hagrid's abilities as a teacher, which are limited. We know he's Harry's friend. He's our friend. That's why we like him. But in the books, you know, Care of Magical Creatures class is almost used as a punchline to add some humor into an otherwise very scary time of year at Hogwarts. Like, you know, the blast-ended scroots are the butt of many jokes. I mean, what is their purpose? They're so weird and odd. You know, the fact that Care of Magical Creatures class is being taught is something, but it's being taught by Hagrid, who, I guess, even though we know he has a passion for beasts, is he really instilling it in the students? And so few students are taking him seriously. I think only, I think there's a line in, is it book 5 or book 6, where Harry comes to terms with one of the beasts and it's just like, okay, I can kind of see how they're kind of cool if you know, I can see what Hagrid likes in them. But then most of the class, Ron is complaining about how weird or odd the beasts are. And I just think that so beasts and how they're viewed, it wasn't the previous beasts teacher. Was that Kettleburn who retired because he lost most of his
injuries,
limbs? Yeah. I mean, and that's terrifying to think that maybe beasts have bitten off this guy's limbs. I think that the real history of Kettleburn is explained on Pottermore, and I don't think it's beast related. But the idea that this goofball, was this previous teacher who was odd and understood, I just don't think it actually is actively furthering the cause in the way that an informative TED talk on beasts these days would do. I think that would go much farther into accomplishing the task. So you can't rely on Care of Magical Creatures at Hogwarts alone to change what Newt is trying to change.
Mm-hmm. I think on that note, we should probably start wrapping up here the character discussion.
Yeah.
I think we hit on all the points for the most part.
Do you want to talk more about his relationships?
Yeah, to the other characters.
Well, and also
yeah, I think,
to like, what do you think his relationship with Lila Lestrange was and what it will be?
Yeah, so it looks like, so those teenage casting roles make it sound like we're going to learn in this next movie what exactly went on between Newt and Lita. We do know they had some sort of falling out. We do know, thanks to a couple of Fantastic Beasts spinoff book type things, that Newt took the fall for something that Leeta did, and presumably we're going to see that scene in the next movie if we're going back to the teenage years. And also, we're probably going to be going back to Hogwarts. Isn't that cool, Ivana?
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think there? What do you think's going on between Newt and Leeta?
I genuinely have no idea. I don't
know. Nobody does. That's okay.
It's possible that she's not a Slytherin. I think that's a possibility. Why do you say that? Well, we hear the name Lestrange and we think Slytherins.
Oh, right.
But she could be an outsider, much like Newt is an outsider. Mm-hmm. And maybe Hufflepuff is the de facto house for outsiders. I mean, maybe that's... They met as students. Either she was a Slytherin who was still a Slytherin but just didn't fit in with the other Slytherins, and that's how they met. Or she was in his house.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's two possibilities there.
And then what
do we actually know about her?
Nothing. She's played by Zoe Kravitz. Nothing. That's what we know.
Yeah, and I guess she's gonna have to come into modern day Fantastic Beasts at some point.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe with the next movie. Because if Newt's heading back over to Europe for this next one and beyond, presumably we're going to see her. I know Zoe Kravitz said she's going to have more of a presence in future movies. So,
has she been confirmed for the next one? Because often, like, that gives it away on IMDb, doesn't it? Where you know who's... Is it not? I don't know if it doesn't.
I think she is, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think she is.
I think Zoe might have given an interview where she said movie 2 is where you're really going to find out a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and I think the teenage role kind of gives that away.
Yeah.
Micah, did you have anything to add here?
No, I mean, I know we've discussed it on other episodes. I'm interested to see what happens in the next film and what exactly he took the fall for. I think they mentioned the Beast, right, at some point, played a role. I don't know if that's been confirmed, though, has it? Was that part of one of those... spinoffs that you mentioned? It was a Jarvie.
Vaguely rings a bell.
Yeah, it was a Jarvie.
Beast is involved.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds kind of similar to a situation that happened with Hagrid, right, where he got expelled. So definitely some parallels there. And I guess the only other thing that I was looking to talk about with Newt was the bond between him and Dumbledore. And, you know, Graves Grindelwald has that line about what makes Albus Dumbledore so fond of you.
Yeah.
Does it have anything to do with Ariana and you know, the theory that she was an Obscurial and he obviously has worked with them, and so there could be a lot of theorizing done there in terms of, you know, is he on somewhat of a quest? You know, he was in Africa trying to save this young girl, and is that a cover story for something else? You know, did he try? I don't know. I mean, I think it's also somewhat coincidental that he finds himself in New York around the same time that there's one running rampant. Mm-hmm.
So you think it might be that Dumbledore comes to Newt thinking that, like, he's the only one who will sympathize with his sister's case?
I think so. I think that, you know, there may be something that he entrusts Newt with, and maybe it's somewhat of regret that he was unable to save his sister, that he's sort of sending Newt out to try and save some of these others that are out there. I wonder. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I feel like it's just too coincidental that this is all kind of tied together in some way.
Yeah, it's certainly fortuitous. But maybe it was Dumbledore that turned Newt on to Obscurials to begin with. I mean, I think Dumbledore would make it his mission after the experience of what happened to his sister to try and investigate and find out more and prevent future children from being killed in this way.
Yeah. Okay, well, to wrap up this discussion, I think we're going to do some Make the Connection, Eric.
Yeah. So, well, it doesn't have anything to do with the discussion necessarily, but we're going to test Ivana's skills of making connections.
Oh no!
Do you remember this from the old MuggleCast days?
No, I don't. What is this?
Oh, okay. God, this is a British. It's a British classic, Ivana. This was Jamie's pioneer segment. and it was it's so quirky and random and absolutely insane. But we had a lot of fun asking our patrons to come up with make the connections for us to do. So we're all going to play. And I'm actually in the middle of putting a list into our document right now.
How it works, Ivana, is somebody gives us a really weird topic and we have to connect it to Harry Potter in some way.
And it's completely remote. It doesn't have anything to do with Harry Potter.
Basically, well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. But we connect it to Harry Potter, and we can say anything. I mean, it's completely our own. We're our own judges on this.
Okay.
We've done a music version of this as well, where you know we play like a new song, and then we try to connect it to Harry Potter with the lyrics or something like that. But in this case, we're going to do these examples from some listeners.
Okay.
And people have wild imaginations. So here's the first one. This is from Jennifer. Harry Potter, make the connection between Harry Potter and traveling to a planet inhabited only by purple flowers and a Converse shoe-shaped sailboat through the stars.
Converse?
Converse, yeah.
Converse shoes. I got it. Okay.
So the connection between Harry Potter and traveling to a planet inhabited only by purple flowers and a Converse shoe-shaped sailboat through the stars. I will take
what
this
are
one.
Your listeners on? This is mad.
You got to ask them. These are our patrons. These are our most hardcore listeners, too.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. So,
this is
all
you muggle casters. I don't know what to say to this one.
Thank you. I got this.
Same.
Okay. First of all, many things, if we've learned nothing from Harry Potter, or if we've learned one thing from Harry Potter, it should be that things are not always what they seem. And a Converse shoe, there's examples in Harry Potter of shoes being portkeys, for instance. Even Newt's own case. It's just blew Ivana's mind right now. I'm having a moment. The Newt case, for instance, the suitcase appears to be this mangy old, dirty old suitcase. And it's actually, in and of itself, a portal to another world. And Newt's case, in particular, let's get a closer dive. There's certain environments inside his case which, you know, very much resemble crazy, odd environments like a planet with only purple flowers. So if there were a beast that Newt knew of that survived on this planet, you know, with just purple flowers, he would recreate it for being inside his case. And, you know, as far as sailing through the stars, that's fun to do, and you could do it inside the case.
Amazing.
I was going to say, yeah, that was very good, Eric. Eric's been thinking about this for like
the
past
day. I have no idea what
sure.
you just said, but that was spot on.
Gosh.
This is from Lords. Make the connection between Fantastic Beasts and overdue library book finds. How about this? We waited, let's see, 5 years for a new Harry Potter Wizarding World movie. It was way overdue.
All right.
Yeah. I felt like I was being penalized every day we didn't have a new Harry Potter movie to look forward to.
I like it. Micah, here's one for you. Make the connection between Harry Potter and jumping on a trampoline in a tutu. This is from Savannah.
Well,
Dumbledore.
Yeah, go
you're
on.
Helping him, Andrew, with
in
the assist.
Spare time, mm-hmm. in the back of the office. Puts on his tutu because we know he's gay, and when he wants to let some steam off, he just hops on the trampoline and woohoo!
Okay.
Wait, isn't there a more obvious one? Isn't there like a picture of trolls in tutus?
Trolls in tutus, yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what's
that was referenced
though. But
that was in a book or something.
Yeah, there's like a picture of them.
Oh, wow. In tutus.
The trolls learning to ballet dance.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, you're right. That's totally a thing. Okay, Micah, here's another one for you then. Sean McKee, make the connection between Harry Potter, Fantastic Beasts, and Razorburn.
All right. The Mertlap bite from Fantastic Beasts.
That's so good.
It looked like some Razorburn
yeah.
after he got or she got done with Jacob.
Yeah.
Here's one for all of us from Stephen Hauser. Make the connection between Harry Potter, Fantastic Beasts, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
uh, the
who would he play?
Oh
who
man,
who would he play? Okay.
He would
Hagrid.
Play the coolest, the very coolest wizard in 1920s attire you've ever seen.
Now he'd play cool Hagrid. All right, cool kids, Hagrid. Come over here for a lesson. Like he'd be super friendly about it, and he'd be able to tame the beast better than Hagrid ever could.
Amanda Ryan King says, make the connection between Fantastic Beasts and Pinterest do-it-yourself fails.
Aww. Seamus Finnegan.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
No, there has to be a better one.
No, that's pretty good.
Yeah, Pinterest do-it-yourself. I mean, yeah, well, I'm just thinking of like a failed class assignment, something that just went wrong during a lesson.
A lot does.
Yeah.
Sophia Gibson, make the connection between Harry Potter and deciding where to eat with your friends.
Where to go to Hogsmeade? That's not a fun answer.
Oh, yeah. Though. Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
No, some of these will go quicker. I got a bunch more. Haley Brown, make the connection between Fantastic Beasts and Michael Phelps swimming against a great white shark.
Goblet of Fire, the mer people.
There you go. Boom. JB Virch. Oh, okay. Ivana, this one's specifically for you.
I'm terrible and at this game. It's fascinating to listen to, but
you're gonna go be great. from JB Virch, we have a backup one in case this doesn't work because he gave two. JB Virch says, make the connection between Luna Lovegood and a biker gang.
What? Oh, God.
Is Luna ever tough? Tough?
Luna tough? No, she's way too laid back to be tough, isn't she?
Yeah.
I don't know. Someone take this one. I can't.
What about when you, in the movies, you get everybody on the Thestrals and head out
that's
to...
perfect!
To the ministry, that right? Good. That's like getting your biker gang together.
Yes! That is,
the
actually.
The Thestral gang!
See, I got
Rev
you.
Rev them up, boys.
There's not ride. Enough beards and tattoos, though, is there?
Yeah.
Oh, well, right. You have a tattoo, don't you?
I do. I have a Luna tattoo.
Yeah, there you go.
Really?
And biker gang.
What
biker
is it? What do you mean?
Tattoos.
What is it? A quote? Or?
It's a no. It's a hare jumping across a moon.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
And hare is her
Patronus.
Patronus. There
yes.
you go.
Okay.
Okay. Couple like two more. Brittany Smith, make the connection between Harry Potter and a dog with a colored mohawk.
Oh, something to do with unicorns.
I was thinking of Tonks.
Yeah, I was too. I didn't want to say that, though.
Metamorphmagist. There you go. Yeah, the colored mohawk. And did we say this one? Alicia, make the connection between Fantastic Beasts and going to an obligatory baby shower.
Slughorn's slug club meetings.
Oh, yeah.
At least with the trio. They didn't want to
be there. That's not Fantastic Beasts.
Oh, no. Darn it.
Yeah.
An obligatory baby shower. Showing up for a meeting at Makuza. I'm trying to think of like the Makuza president having to deal with Tina. What do you want, Tina?
Yeah.
Come on, Tina. I don't know. Having to deal with an obligatory disgruntled employee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Serafina Pickery probably does a lot of things out of duty that she would rather not do.
Yeah,
but trying times, and she's a good person, so she'll go and handle it.
No, interesting.
We definitely want to thank all of our patrons for supplying the Make the Connections that we played. That was a lot of fun. Good to get to have fun.
Sorry, I'm not on your level. I didn't understand that game.
No. Look, I wanted to get to the purple beaver flying a cheese helicopter, but we'll save that one for next time.
Do you have an answer for that?
No, not at all, but maybe...
Micah needs a week to think on it.
Yeah, no, expect to see that in the next Fantastic Beasts film.
Yeah.
He plays a major role.
Oh, especially if the beasts are on the front lines, the cheese helicopter is definitely the first line of defense.
We do want to let everybody know that Micah, Eric, and I will be at MuggleNet Live 2017, 19 years later. Believe it or not, Ivana, September 1st, 2017 is... in canon, 19 years later, just like
is
the
it?
Epilogue.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And that's when you're having a convention?
Yeah
so MuggleNet Live.
So it's a one-night event inside the Wizarding World of Harry Potter Orlando, including King's Cross Station, where we can catch the train off platform 9 3/4 and sip down some unlimited butterbeer. And also we have some film members in attendance. Details are all on the top post in the MuggleCast website, including discounted hotel rates and a special promotional code for listeners of our show. So go check out. That's, again, MuggleNet Live, and you can find out more information at MuggleCast.com.
Ivana, thanks so much for coming on the show today. We
Thank
really
you
appreciate
for having
it.
Me. It's been really fun.
It was fun.
I wish I'd, it I can't fun. Believe this has been my first official. Like, I know I've been on
I
the
know.
As an interview, mm-hmm. but this is a yeah. fun one to just, I don't know, be yeah. a geek.
Yeah, no, it's been great, and we'll let everybody know about your podcast that you're launching once it gets up and running.
Thank yeah, have you chosen a name?
Yeah, it's called the Chick Peeps Podcast.
Chick Peeps?
Yeah, as in it. Like chick people. And also mm-hmm. I really like chickpeas.
The Chickpeas Podcast or Chick Peeps.
You should eat chickpeas Peeps. While podcasting every episode.
I probably will.
Oh. Are they noisy food when you eat them? Do they crunch? Do they crackle?
Have you never had a chickpea?
No, I've never had a chickpea.
Oh my gosh, Eric. Wow. Okay.
I'm going to remedy this
They're
today.
Like beans.
You need to become a vegan.
They're like the these marined little bean things, but they can be made into like chips and
But do
sorts.
They crackle when you eat them? Like,
no, sorry.
Bean? All right. Well, I was really hoping that was the case, but okay.
Well, you've had hummus, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right. That's made Isn't of it... chickpeas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
oh,
there
cool.
you go.
Just ground up.
And Ivana, I was stalking your Instagram while we were recording, and I saw you went to Veggie Grill. You would eat a Veggie Grill in LA.
I love
Veggie Grill.
Isn't it the
yes.
best? It's so
it
good.
It is the best. I would be a full-time vegan if I could eat their breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Really? Okay.
You know, every day.
That's
it's
good.
It's so good.
Well, yeah. that's encouraging.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just because I think some people think, oh, vegan food, it won't taste good or stuff like that. But you eat there, and I assume other vegan places.
Exactly. I know. It's great. Just people need – that's what I want to do with my podcast. Just make people aware that it's not a lifestyle of, like, deprivation or restriction. It's just a very different yeah. way, and there's a very joyful way of doing it. Yeah, I tend to always take my omnivorous friends there. Because it's like,
yeah.
it's not too expensive and it's not too, there's some of them that are just like way too expensive and people make mistake of thinking vegan is healthy and it absolutely yeah. does not have to be. Yeah.
Yeah. In the case of Veggie Grill, they have like burgers.
Yeah.
And so when I take somebody there for the first time, I'm like, get what you would eat at a place where you would like eat meat. So you like burgers? Have a Veggie Grill burger and I promise you'll like it. So... Awesome. Well, again, thank you for coming on. We really
sure,
appreciate it.
You
are a true fan.
It's fun.
We loved having you on. Yeah.
I love and, being on. And thank you guys for putting up that casting announcement all them years ago.
Aw,
I
yeah.
guess I should thank well, you for that here.
tell J.K. Rowling we said hi. And by the way, ask her about Scorbis next time you see her.
Scorbis.
Let us know what she says.
I can't believe nobody has asked her about this.
I know.
Oh, but also try and get to the bottom of the Lavender Brown thing. Are you aware of this? Evie, that Lavender Brown's life or death has been in question for years now.
Oh, wait. Does she
We don't
die?
Know. It's on Pottermore. They're not being clear.
Well, well, does she?
Yeah.
She's certainly attacked by Greyback, but, you know, his M.O. is attacking children and leaving them alive.
Are you serious? Like, oh, wow.
He has enough restraint to stop eating somebody so that they will be... Because he wants to make as many werewolf abominations as he can, right?
Oh.
So on Pottermore, this whole story in a nutshell is her bio was changed. And it initially had said, what, that she survived?
Presumed dead, and then they just got rid of it.
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
Ooh, controversial.
Wow. Right,
know, right.
So since you have the open line to Joe, we could really use that answer.
Okay.
And also ask her to come on the podcast.
Okay.
Oh yeah, definitely. Tell her how much fun that you had, how nice we all are,
okay.
And we promise to be nice to.
It's been 12 years. I mean,
haven't you interviewed her?
No,
no. Just Emerson.
Emerson. Yeah.
But,
that's a long time ago.
Well, anyway, you're always welcome back, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Okay. Well, let me know if there's any episodes related to things I'd be interested in. If you're doing any Love Good episodes, I'm down.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll do maybe a dive back into Xenophilius and Luna.
Yeah.
Maybe. Cool. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
And one quick note, we will actually be off next week for the 4th of July holiday, so we will see you after that. We have a Fantastic Beasts commentary episode coming up very soon, and we are also going to do a mailbag episode in the coming weeks. catch up on your feedback. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm Andrew.
I'm Eric.
I'm Micah.
I'm Evie. Did you want me to say that or
thanks
no?
Again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Thanks, okay. Evie. Thanks, Evie. We'll see everybody next time. Goodbye.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.